Hello, beautiful souls. Welcome back to the Luminary Podcast. I am your forever and ever host. You're not getting rid of me. Mostly because I'm the only one who works here. As always, I missed you guys. I hope that you are enjoying the latest episodes where we've had some special guests. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to them yet, definitely put them on your list. Okay, this is a major, major episode. This is an episode that I'm definitely going to get the most pushback and the most jaw drops on. It has the power to really, really activate you in a way that you have not been activated yet in your ascension journey, because I'm bringing a lot of Atlantean and Lemurian memory and coding back to the surface and reactivating that in your divine cosmic memory. Now, as far as where am I going to get the most pushback, it's mostly because we are talking about civilizations that existed for many, many thousands of years longer than humanity. And you couldn't sum up the story of humanity in 2 hours if you tried. There's too much that goes on the planet. And so I've summarized and I have really brought it down to what wanted to come through for this episode from the Akashic Records, from the Arcturian Council of Eight, and from my own oversoul. So it has the flavor of my oversoul all over it. And this is true whenever you are telling these really big galactic or civilization stories. It's just impossible for you to really remove the essence of the channeler from it. And I really like to preface that and kind of set up the conversation and set up what you're about to receive within that context. It's so important to understand that this is a multifaceted conversation. So you may hear things from me, you may hear things from other channels. I certainly have had conversations, especially about Atlantis, with Bashar. And we don't really see eye to eye on Atlantis, at least not in every single aspect. And that's okay. If you don't know who Bashar is one of the most incredible extraterrestrials who is channeled by Daryl Anka. And I absolutely love them. Bashar came to me probably somewhere in the last 6 months and said, hey, if you ever want to chat, I'm open to chatting. And so we've had a couple of conversations, especially about Atlantis, and he channels about Atlantis through Daryl. Daryl's been doing that work for over 20 years, and they're absolutely incredible. However, it is absolutely possible that myself and many other channels receive different information from the vast Akashic Records based on what fractals of the I Am want to be ignited and remembered by you. And it's possible that they have a fractal and I have a fractal, and they're all a part of the same bigger picture. They are all pieces of the bigger picture. So what I say about Atlantis and Lemuria might be different from what you hear from other channels. Allow yourself to open, allow yourself to receive. It is a buffet. Take what you desire, take what resonates with you, leave the rest for someone else that is their piece of the puzzle. But I think that if you found this podcast and you're here and you're a regular listener and something about the information that I channel resonates with you, I believe that this episode was channeled for you. Mostly because I was overcome with this desire when I was recently talking to Alicia about, you know, starting back up on our episodes again and what we wanted to do. We wanted to do kind of a different format. So in this episode, I'm not channeling with my eyes closed. I am awake and aware, and I pulled all of the information before we had the conversation. And then, of course, I kind of go into a little bit of channeling state. At this point, channeling with my eyes open is an everyday occurrence. And so if you'd like to watch this episode, you can watch the whole conversation with me and Alicia on my YouTube channel, and the name of that YouTube channel is Wellspring Official. As always, I want to give a special shout out and express my profound and eternal gratitude to Alicia Bryan for this collaboration and this co-creation. She has been one of the most incredible people to have been brought in my life during my spiritual awakening, and it has been absolutely kismet. She was one of the first people who ever messaged me the moment I announced I was doing channeled energy readings, and that was way back in the day. So I've had the honor of being able to work with her, and now the honor of being able to co-create some of the most special and galactic episodes that I've ever been able to produce for you guys on this podcast. In fact, our episode together about Andromeda and channeling the Andromedan Council of Light is the number one most downloaded episode of all time on the podcast. So a huge, huge thank you to Alicia for her continued support and interest in these kinds of conversations, for her time, her energy, and her attention. And I hope that you guys will really enjoy this long but profound and activating conversation, revealing some of the history of ancient Lemuria and ancient Atlantis.
I want to kind of start with, you know, where I'm getting the information from. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast a few times before, but if you guys are new listeners, you always want to know where a channel is getting their information from so that you can decide how you feel about their information, what they're telling you. And you're going to hear different things from different channels because there are billions and trillions of Akashic records, and there are Akashic records from every possible angle and all of the nuance and all of the projections that we bring through our own lens and how we interpret the Akashic records. So that is one of the places where I'm getting most of the information about Atlantis and Lemuria. Obviously for Lemuria, I'm downloading quite a bit of it from my own soul cosmic memory. And then of course, tapping into the Akashic records that are held by the Arcturians. We do have the Arcturian Council here with us, and they're kind of supporting me to answer any questions that Alicia might have on behalf of the listeners and the audience. And any questions that maybe just pop up that I don't know the answer to, who I will be tapping in to channel those answers from is the Arcturian Council of Eight. And they're kind of the overseers of the local Akashic records. So they're your local librarian. And we'll be tapping in to get that information. A little bit is coming again from my own soul cosmic memory, which is my higher self. So that's where everything is being downloaded from. I want to start off with just asking Alicia and just us sharing, you know, what, like when you started your spiritual awakening journey and you started to hear about, you know, tales of Atlantis, and then eventually I think Lemuria is the one that's still less well known. Especially here in the West, we tend to really fantasize and talk a lot about Atlantis and the lost city of Atlantis. And, you know, there's a Disney movie about it. So I'm just curious, like when you first got into spirituality and started, you know, doing your research and investigating things, what did you think when you started hearing of these lost civilizations that there is literally, you know, almost no proof on the planet in third dimension for us to look at and to see? What did you think?
I think that's what I struggle with the most. It's not that I don't believe it, because there's so many things, right, that like we don't have like hard written facts for, but like the artifacts are there, or artifacts are there that, like, you know, there's some in Asia and there's some in South America. And so it's like, well, we don't have the exact answers for that, but it exists. You know what I mean? So it's like somewhere that answer exists. But I don't think I really knew that Atlantis was connected in the world of spirituality until we started talking about Lemuria, which I didn't hear about Lemuria or Mu until you had mentioned it. And we were talking about past lives. And I think it's hard to get a grasp on that for people like me, because I can't exactly like visualize it right, and it's not in textbooks. There's not many like things in the library about it. You know what I mean? Like you can come across it when you're researching ancient civilizations, but then again, yeah, there's real no like no real hard evidence that like these were the people that lived here from this year. And I think that's what generally like humans struggle with. And as far as Atlantis too, I think it's so hard to take that fantasy away from it because it's been through so many variations of that story. And also like growing up, yeah, when the movie did come out, it makes it very difficult to understand, like, all right, let's separate real from just like a fabricated story. And a lot of people can only get their information from people that channel this information like you. And although there are probably more than a handful of people out there, like if you go on YouTube and you search it or you're looking through the internet, it's hard to find places that focus on Lemuria and Atlantis in a spiritual sense. You know, there's a lot of like conspiracy theorists that talk about Atlantis in just like a very like hard facts way, like scientifically. And then there's a handful that talk about it spiritually, and trying to find the in between is very interesting, which led me to the long list of questions that I sent you.
Yeah, that's so true. I'll just be totally honest. When I first like heard about it, and I was just starting my spiritual awakening, just getting into all of this, you know, kind of quantum information. I wasn't a channel yet, and I remember seeing this like it wasn't a TikTok, but it was like a reel or something. It was like a video on Instagram, and this girl was like, "Are you from Lemuria? Like maybe you were a dolphin in a past life." And I remember so clearly looking at that and thinking like, that is bullshit. Thought straight up, like that's the most bullshit thing I've ever heard of. And what's interesting after I've became a channel and had, you know, very clear access to all of this information, was able to start sorting through, you know, the memory and the Akashic records of Lemuria versus Atlantis, is that the memory got, it definitely got like meshed together. You know, we think of Atlantis as like this underwater, like utopia paradise place. And the truth is that, you know, the more connected to the civilization that was more connected to water was the Lemurians, and that was on the other side of the planet. It was in the Pacific, and the Atlanteans were definitely, you know, land-based, so they used water, and we'll talk about some of the technology that they used and were able to create and to really advance their civilization in a short amount of time. But they used water, but they definitely weren't an underwater like civilization. And you know, it's been interesting to sort them out and to see the differences, and how much more the memory of Lemuria has been lost to us. And I think that's because most of the Lemurian souls have moved on and they've gone through their own ascension and they're on different planets now. But they were here the longest. And so I guess that's where we'll start. We're going to start with the oldest civilization. And I want to give you guys this overview. I've dropped a lot of little facts about Lemuria and dates and dimensions on the podcast before, but I want to kind of give it some structure. So Lemuria itself was founded essentially by a group of Orion beings. And these Orion souls were highly divine feminine, and they were seeking to leave the Orion constellation. They wanted to leave, they wanted to go somewhere else. And they had been incarnating mostly on Mintanka. And Mintanka is a water world in Orion. I think a lot of you guys resonate with having, you know, memories or past lives or dreams of being some sort of water being, kind of a mermaid-like being. And while they are significantly different than the mermaid lore we have here on Earth, there was an entire planet in Orion that was a water world, and they were able to have a lot of different, very light karmic experiences It was mostly about relationships and community and working together. And when Orion itself started to kind of become entrenched in lower frequency, lower vibrational energies, most of the Mentankans wanted to either ascend if they were at that point in their journey, and the younger ones wanted to leave and they wanted to have a different experience. They knew that they needed a different catalyst, and the catalyst that you can have underwater is not the same as what you can have on land. On land, you can build things, you can communicate verbally instead of just with like sonic noise moving through the water. It's a totally different experience, and in many ways it's more dense and it's a little bit more difficult. And so this group of Mentankins, mostly from Orion, wanted to leave. They wanted to go somewhere else. And this was 75,000 years ago, almost exactly, because we just hit the end of that 75,000 year cycle for third density in 2012. So about 75,000 years ago, they went to the GFL, they went to the Council of Saturn. So they would have gone to the GFL, and they would have, in the etheric realm, they would have been speaking to the Council of Saturn. I think that's kind of an easier way to think of it, is that if you're not incarnated inside of a body, the council that you're working with to relocate is going to be mostly the Council of Saturn. And then as far as in incarnation, you're going to be working with the GFL. So they went to the GFL and to the Council of Saturn, and they asked to come to Gaia. And they you it's you you have to have a pitch. If you want to bring a whole civilization, if you want to have like you're gonna you like you've got to have bodies, right? You have to have some form of a body, and it had to be the right dimension for the planet. It has to be the right density for the planet. And you've got to have your pitch ready of like, what are we going to do there? What's our purpose going to be there? How are we going to grow in our own consciousness, which is the point of the whole universe? And that's really what the Council of Saturn would have wanted to know, is like, what is your purpose in you going there and being there? Now, Earth would have just been entering into third density. So this was like the first time that any self-aware beings were going to be allowed to populate the planet. And if you have any like dreams or imagination about like Garden of Eden and like the first beings like stepping onto the planet, that would have been the moment. And it was in the where we now have the Pacific Ocean, as opposed to many of the other places on the planet where they've talked about that. But this group would have gone and had their pitch of what they wanted to do. Now, Gaia is a divine feminine planet, and each planet has either divine feminine core, divine masculine core. A very good example is, we talk about Venus and Mars, and it's like women are from Venus and men are from Mars. And where we get that from is that the core energy of Mars is divine masculine, the core energy of Venus and of Gaia is divine feminine. So this group was very divine feminine, and they said that we want to go there, and we think that our energy will harmonize with the planet very well. We would oversee and be stewards of the planet, the areas that we populate, and our purpose is to grow ourselves. And they would have been 10 to 12 dimensional beings. So in the highest dimension that you can be while still being in third density and starting to accumulate karma. And so they were approved to come here and to allow this kind of harmonization process to occur. And they landed, or they started to populate on a continent that would have been in the Pacific Ocean. And a continent doesn't exist in its full form anymore, but we can see all of the different Pacific islands, and especially Hawaii, would have been part of that continent, or different large islands that would have been part of the Lemurian civilization. So they came here and they started to incarnate. They were in very high frequency bodies. They were not as dense as the chemical body that the humans are in right now. And just to clarify, I think that I'll refer to the Gaian human, like what we are as Gaians. That's what we're referred to galactically. And then, of course, Lemurians and Atlanteans. And this would have been three different body vehicles that would have looked similar, but it would not have, you would not mistake a Lemurian for a Gaian any day of the week. You would say they're too tall. They look too shiny, especially to our eyes, because they would have had a really high crystalline DNA content still. So that would not have been deactivated in them yet. This is probably a good time to mention that if you haven't listened to my podcast episode 123, where I talk about fallen angels and I talk about the descent through dimensions, that's really, really important. So you can imagine there's this like V shape, and as we move through third density, a planet will go through what's called a fall, and it will fall through dimensions. And that happens through the species and through the karma that's being played out in that or on that planet during third density. And so the Lemurians would have been 10 to 12th dimension. Then we had the Atlanteans come in, and they were primarily fifth through eighth dimension. And then, of course, us here, the Gaians, we are third dimension and third density. And so they would have been third density, all of them, Lemurians and Atlanteans alike. They accumulated karma, they had karmic relationships. Many of you guys were there. I know I've done readings for a lot of you guys, and you were there and you had different Lemurian incarnations, some of them for long periods of time, some of them for short periods of time. And I myself caught the tail end of the Lemurian civilization about 13, 14,000 years ago. So I'm curious, Alicia, what kind of questions do you have about the Lemurians?
I guess first I was trying to understand what you said, just kind of clarified the timeline question that I had. So is it correct in assuming that like Lemuria was the first thing, like before Atlanteans, or was that happening simultaneously?
There was some overlap towards the end of the Lemurian civilization being here. And it was by no means during the height of Lemurian civilization. But yeah, the Lemurians were here for about 60,000 years, and they started populating the planet about 75,000 years ago. And so they were here for 60,000 years. And something Alicia and I were talking about before we started recording is when you're talking about a civilization that's 60,000 years and the Gaians have only been here for 7,500 years, it is almost incomprehensible, you know, the different rises of their civilization, the different evolutions of their civilization, the different, you know, falls that they would have gone through, the ebbs and flows in population, the ways that their population would have started to spread across the planet. And by no means were they told you can only stay on this one continent. That continent just happened to be where they felt the most frequency resonant, and that's just where they started. And so we still see some DNA that has been encoded into the Gaian. And we still see a lot of that in Pacific Islanders, Southeast Asia, a lot of the native civilizations that are on the North America and South America that would be on the west coast of those continents. We still see that DNA. That DNA is incredibly resilient. We're probably going to be talking a lot about DNA today. It's incredibly resilient. It is near impossible, despite many attempts by different, you know, nefarious groups who are kind of always lurking around causing trouble. By their attempts to snuff out that DNA has all been completely unsuccessful. It's like the most resilient DNA. And I know a lot of you guys really resonate with Lemuria, or you re really resonate with water civilizations, or the Native or First Nations on the North America, and a lot of you are from South America or listening from South America. And if you feel that resonance with Lemuria, you're probably a carrier of those DNA, that DNA and those codes. And you're a part of something that's really, really special, that is so incredibly important. I mean, the destruction of DNA has never really been successful, but there have been times where it's been a pretty close call. And that's why, DNA and codes and templates are so important. And that's a really big part of the Lemurian story, is that their DNA has that high frequency of 10th to 12th dimension. And so it's going to be a part of the what we would call the resurrection of the Gaian, the resurrection of the future human, and how we'll begin our ascent back through dimensions as we continue to evolve forward.
Wow. So speaking of DNA, I guess I want to kind of understand better what what does this civilization look like? And I know there can be like many different things. So now you mentioned those areas and like cultures in those areas have certain looks, but like it spans such a huge radius. And plus it was not what we expect, Gaians to look like today. So like half of my brain is like, is it like this like fairy water world, like part Moana, you know what I mean? Like so that's what I'm seeing. And I don't know how to like how to visualize, you know what I mean?
So I think the best way to visualize is in two different ways. I'll definitely do some descriptors, especially of the bodies, because I think that that's where a lot of people will start to feel resonance, if you've inhabited one of those Lemurian bodies. And then to the other way is to understand that when you are operating from 10th to 12th dimension, things do look like what we would perceive to be a fairy tale. It has that luster and that like divine perfection to it that we don't see as much because we're in the lowest dimension. And so things can feel a little bit colorless, a little bit more dull down here because it is so dense. And the light that is penetrating and radiating through nature and through our physical bodies is much more dim in third dimension. So if you were looking at the world through the eyes of a Lemurian, yes, it would look more lustrous. It would look more luminous. It would have this light radiating out of it. You would feel much more connected to it. And so them coming from a water world and bringing some of that Mentankin DNA with them to create the Lemurian bodies, they were very, very connected with water. And they would have been in a type of chemical hybrid with crystalline DNA body, because they haven't gone through their descent yet. So we come from crystalline down to carbon chemical, and then we're going to rise back up again into crystalline. And so they would have been sort of a hybrid of that because they were on the karmic path. And so that karma would have been stored in the chemical carbon part of the body. So as far as looks, we were tall. Most species are really tall. There are a few exceptions, the short grays and some variations of the Arcturians have been very short, and some variations of the Saurians have been really short. But a lot of the ones that come from those really, really ancient Lyran templates, which is, this form that we see here, five fingers, we have a very similar humanoid look. Those tend to be very tall. And so the Lemurians were really tall. They were very lithe. They were very tan skin, dark hair. And the reason for that was obviously it was much warmer on the planet back then. And so they would make DNA upgrades and they would create the bodies to be suitable for that weather, so that you're not, you wouldn't want to put someone fair skin, fair hair out there right at the equator in the Pacific Islands. You would want someone, you would want a body, a physical body vehicle that was designed for being under the sun for long hours, And because of the really high crystalline DNA content, you know, there were certain points in Lemurian physical evolution where they had like more webbed feet that were for swimming, or they would have like more webbed hands. They would have a significant portion of skin in between the hands to help them swim better. And they were a water civilization. Like they did not sleep underwater or build underwater. They did that all on land, but they were really, really connected to water, and the crystalline content that's in water would have been seen as like life force. So yeah, very long, dark hair, very angular planes of the face. They would have had, you know, the elongated eyes, and everything was designed for them to be optimal under on a very hot planet, under the sun, for long periods of time, and of course in the water, which also adds that extra element. Everyone knows you can get sunburnt from spending too much time in the water under the sun. You get sunburnt much faster, and so their bodies would have been designed to withstand that. Let me see if there's anything else. Yeah, there is actually. You know, we talked a little bit about shape shifting, and shape shifting was something that, to a certain degree, at the height of their civilization, they were able to do, and that's because crystalline is very pliable. It is not as dense as carbon chemical, and so there would have been certain beings or certain like skill sets that could be developed through meditation and through intention, where they would have been able to breathe underwater for a certain amount of time. They would have been able to make certain shifts in their body in order to optimize them for being underwater, for diving to really deep depths. Anything that was really for that optimization and for spending more time in water. I know that there are many tales out there of, you know, that they would make full shapeshift transformations and like become a dolphin or something. And what I have seen in the Akashic records, from what I have looked through, there was nothing to that degree. They were minor shifts, minor changes to allow them to breathe underwater, to allow them to eventually, it became being able to hold their breath for quite a long time. And so it depended really on the frequency of the population, civilization, what they were being taught about their abilities. The Lemurians never really had a lot of technology the way that we do. Because they were 10th to 12th dimensional beings, their version of technology would have been, you know, utilizing their third eye, you know, downloading information from the quantum field and using frequency, and of course, utilizing the high crystalline content in their DNA for physical changes, and of course, for creation, for creating their cities, which were minimal even at the height of their civilization. It was nothing like Atlantis or even like the Gaians here now. There was no New York City of Lemuria.
That actually brings me into my next question. I think also a place where humans today might have problems grasping this is like when we hear the word civilization, like we're back in middle school history class, social studies, like we're thinking about like Roman, Greece, like that's what a typical, early civilization looks like to us. And obviously, this is a different dimension. So it's like, what does that look like? What is their, like, do people have jobs? Like, are they just sitting there meditating all day? Like, is it really a fairy tale? Like, what is their, I don't want to say what is their purpose, but essentially, like, is it just like a consciousness thing?
What's their day to day?
Right.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. That's a really great question. No, not just meditating all day. You know, there were many different temples. Temples for Lemurians were very sacred. It was probably one of the only like physical structures that they put a lot of time, energy, and attention into creating. They would create these beautiful circular temples and they would make them all out of like this white. It wasn't really a stone. It almost would have looked like sand or like sandstone, but it would have been white. Just like beautiful architecture that they would have taken a lot of time, a lot of energy and attention to creating. And all of it had a purpose that it would radiate frequency from the heart chakra. And it would actually, the frequency was so high, you'd be able to hear it as music. So there were temple keepers, there were acolytes, you know, those who were studying to be different priests, priestesses, and those are just the words that I have to describe those kinds of positions. They weren't worshiping a god or a deity or a group of deities. They were really focused on heart-based consciousness, and on raising the frequency of their civilization, and then, of course, healing through frequency, healing physical ailments through frequency, which at that dimension and at that level of consciousness would have been so easy. There wouldn't have been a need for doctors. There wouldn't have been a need for, you know, surgeons or anything like that. Everything would have been healed through frequency inside of their temples. So if you were ill, you'd be brought to a temple. But as far as their day to day, it went through a lot of different variations. And yes, there were jobs. I think that the most common job, I hope this doesn't surprise anyone, is fishermen and fisherwomen. They were fishermen people, you know. They went through a lot of variations about what they actually ate. There was definitely a long period of time where they did not eat any or consume any like living animals. But towards the end, especially when the Atlanteans were on the planet, kind of bringing them down in frequency, and that's not necessarily a negative thing, it's a necessary thing. Then they started to become more like fish eaters or pescatarians, I guess you could say. There wasn't really a need for farming, but there was definitely a lot of like gathering that would happen. And they were very tribal. And so if you were in the family, you know, they had forms of marriage. They had what we would think of as like husband and wife, and you would procreate and have children, and you would take care of your home, and your partner would gather things that were needed and necessary for the home and build the home. And so a lot of it was physical labor, and that was to support the family unit and then also the tribe and the group there. I don't know that they would use the word tribe because there wasn't a lot of separation, but it was, you know, the local community was that tribe for them, and so they would all support each other in that way. And then, of course, they had different, you know, gatherings. They were not necessarily as connected to the moon as we are. The moon, gosh, I honestly don't even think that the moon that we have now was even here back then. But definitely, yeah, sorry if anyone's
It's
new. Moon is
crazy.
new. But they definitely observed solar cycles, and so would have been a lot of like celebrating of the different solar cycles and kind of harnessing the energy that way. So as far as, you know, jobs, there was no currency. They weren't paid in anything. It was trade. And so that was similar to how early humans were. I don't want to use the term hunter-gatherer as if they were like hunting wild boars or something, but there was a lot of gathering, and that was to build, you know, the home structures, baskets, boats, things that they would have needed for their community and for the family unit. Now, what's interesting is that they had marriage, and that's something that was brought from Orion. So there's always been like partnerships, but they've been very loose and varied throughout different galactic societies. And I've always found it interesting that in Lemuria, especially towards the tail end, they had pretty elaborate marriages and marriage ceremonies and this like commitment to a partner. That was something that was starting to come into their civilization and become more prominent. They were love matches, which is very romantic, very, beautiful. And so the partner that you chose would have been a love match, and they stayed together for their whole entire life. And losing their partner was very, very devastating. It was something that you could start to experience lower dimensional energies, sadness, which in 10th and 12th dimension, you try to imagine sadness, and it's not the same as like the deep grief and depression that we can experience here. But for them, it would have been a pull to a lower frequency. So they made love matches, and they also lived for a really long time. They lived for about 1100 years, would have been like the average lifetime. And that stayed pretty normal for like the last 20,000 years of their civilization. 1,000, 1,100, maybe 1,300 of our years, like how we measure our years. So that's been translated for me. And you didn't get married at 20 years old. For your first 100 years, you're still a kid, still young, you're still inexperienced. So there was a lot of time for them to move if they wanted to move. That was something that we did. You could travel, but you were traveling by foot or by boat. You wanted to see other things. That wasn't unheard of, and it wasn't considered like abandoning the tribe or going off and into something dangerous at all. Because there really wasn't. They didn't really have any like natural predators. They were the only civilization until the Atlanteans came. And when the Atlanteans got here, they mostly left the Lemurians alone and kind of considered them, like the indigenous peoples. And the Atlanteans were kind of the new colonizers. I don't have a better word for it. The new colonizers of the different side of the planet. So yeah, I hope that kind of brings some clarity to what day-to-day life was like for them. Very much like indigenous culture, but I would say that there was less of the hunting aspect that we associate with indigenous cultures. But yeah, more time spent around the fire with the family and community was really, really big.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think it sounds so much like what we would think of an indigenous culture, but at the same time, right, like they did have like a higher knowledge, like a higher consciousness, correct? So it's like kind of like that's kind of wild to think about though, like living in that way and not having like what we have an image of Atlantis is like, you know what I mean? Like maybe flying cars or like really high buildings or things like just really living with the earth, but also having this like insanely high consciousness is kind of like wild to imagine.
Yeah. And part of that is like they were a divine feminine culture. And so what I see a lot in divine feminine civilizations is this very strong pull to stay close to nature and to not get too far from nature, and to always have nature as like that reference point of source and source flowing through us, keeping that really strong connection. And in many civilizations, even for us as Gaians, the women were like the medicine woman, the one who could communicate with spirit, the one who was connected to the other dimensions and the other planes of consciousness. And we've lost that a lot in Western culture, especially. But I mean, it's in that divine femininity is that desire and that pull to stay close to source. And what I see in divine masculine civilizations, which I guess we'll kind of go into Atlantis, but what I see in their civilizations is the desire to build. And that is really driven by masculine energy. They want to build. They want to build a lot. They want to build a high. They want to build elaborately. And it's masculine energy, which is necessary, of course, for us. So the way that the Atlanteans started to get their approval to come here is that the Lemurians had been on this planet for, they'd been here since about 75,000 years ago. And then the Atlanteans arrived and were given approval to start populating on the other side of the planet about 25,000 years ago. And so the reason that the GFL, who worked mostly with the Atlantean civilization and approving them to come here at the same time as the Lemurians, is that the Lemurians were not evolving. They weren't descending in the dimensions, which is necessary. And they'd been on the planet for a long time. So the planet only gets 75,000 years to host third density civilizations. Whatever entities are going to come here and experience the karmic path, it's 75,000 years, and it's pretty strict cutoff for the planet itself. And the civilization has to find, if they want to stay on the karmic path, they have to find a different planet that's third density. So they'd been here for a long time and they weren't really descending in dimension. And part of that is because they'd harmonized so well with their divine feminine civilization, with the divine feminine core of Gaia. And so there wasn't a lot of karma happening. There wasn't a lot of friction. They needed more catalyst in order to make the full descent, so that they could actually experience the ascension. And so that's why the Atlanteans were given approval. And just before I start in on Atlanteans and where they came from, I just want to see if you have any other questions about the Lemurians.
My last question was really about how they're connected. So I'm assuming that's where you're going. And then I do have a question that is probably better for later about Mount Shasta and their connection to that. So that was really, Lemuria. However, I do have a question on what you're talking about now, that like 75,000 year cutoff, that's just like you in the universal guidebook. Like, where does that come from?
Yeah. So the place where I was first brought back to the information was through the Law of One channel transcripts. Talks about 75,000 years for third density. I don't think they gave fourth density, but then they give fifth density. And I think it's in like the millions or billions of years. And you can go into the Akashic records, and if you know what you're looking for, you can find the same thing. So 75,000 years is what they've translated for the way that we measure our years right now. So they translated that into we measure our year 365 days, approximately. And so that's where the translation is coming from. So if that's how you measure your years, you get 75,000. And it is such a short amount of time. I mean, it's like a blink. And it's nice that it's a blink, because the soul doesn't really want to stay in lower dimensions for a long time. It's excruciating. You know, all of us have experienced anxiety, depression, we're born into this world at 3D, which is the lowest that you can go. And so the soul doesn't really want to stay there for too long. And I think that's why it's the shortest of all the densities.
So essentially for Lemuria, like they weren't moving up, or they weren't moving down.
They weren't.
So they had to move down to third density in order to make their way back up. Like that was the deal.
Third dimension. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. They would have been in the density, but dimension, you have to go through that fall. That experience has to be had, in order for the ascension to kick in for those souls. So they weren't evolving down. And I mean, for some of us, it's like, wow, like good job. And on the other hand, we're like, we've got to have a catalyst come through in order to To bring them all the way down in dimensions, and then of course they have that resurrection point. So that's where the Atlanteans come in. And the Atlanteans, what's very interesting about them, and sometimes I can sound a little salty when I'm talking about them, just because I was here on the planet when they were fucking around, and that my last Lemurian lifetime ended because of their fuckery. So, there's a little salt in my soul about it.
Naturally.
Yeah. But the Atlanteans were part of this group of souls who were designed for the Pleiades. And in future time space, they are all Pleiadians. The Pleiades, as we know, is a divine feminine galactic society. And so this group of souls was designed to kind of bring some balance. They were more interested in divine masculinity. And so they were younger souls. They would have had a few lifetimes in the higher dimensions, in different, dwarf galaxies. And then once they started to get a little bit deeper into their karmic path, and they were ready to experience like fifth through eighth dimension on a third density planet. And so they came to the GFL, and it was a group who were interested in experiencing divine masculine incarnations. And the GFL, having this quandary of, the Gaians or the, sorry, not the Gaians, but on Gaia, the Lemurians are not descending in dimension. And so they offered, like there is a planet where we need some divine masculine energy to kind of be a catalyst and to shake things up so that we can continue evolving on this planet. And that was Gaia. So they kind of collaborated together and they got that approval for them to come and to start their civilization. The templates that were used for early Atlanteans were based off of Lemurian templates so that they weren't necessarily, arriving in ships and bringing out like different bodies. The bodies were very similar. And of course, the Atlanteans had changes that they wanted to make. So sometimes you can hear people call the Atlanteans Pleiadians at the same time. And it can get a little confusing because there is this sort of negative energy or this negative twist on the Atlanteans and what they did during their time here. And it's by no means reflective of the entire Pleiadian society. That's just what they were designed for. It's like having a small group of people from Canada. We can't attribute all of the actions of Canada to the small group of people. So they were able to come here, and the planet was quite different back then. We had a larger continent in the Atlantic Ocean, and then we had a larger continent that would have stretched almost all the way to Africa. It would have been in the Atlantic Ocean and almost all the way from the tip of like Mexico, and then of course the eastern United States. And so there would have been this continent there, and most of what we understand to be the eastern side of the United States would have been submerged in water. So there would have been, if you can imagine, it just kind of reversing. There's part of the Atlantic that's above water, and then part of what we see now is the other side of the United States would have been submerged, and part of northeastern Canada. And that continent and that civilization, they took different body vehicles from Lemurians. They made different upgrades and then they started to incarnate into them. Their civilization was very short. And that is what has always fascinated me about Atlantis is the divine masculine works really quickly when it is driven. And so they were only here for 12, 13,000 years before their official kind of wipe off, they were wiped off the earth. And that was always part of the plan. And I think sometimes it can be a little jarring for souls to realize that when you get approval to go and populate on a planet, the councils that you're talking to, like the Council of Saturn, already sees like the entire civilization that you're going to have, the fall or the rise and everything and how it ends. They already see the end of the story. And so it can be a little jarring for some people to be like, oh, you let me come here and you didn't tell me that it was only going to last 12,000 years and then everyone was going to die and self-destruct and there was going to be all of this pain. But that's part of the journey of consciousness. That's part of what we experience on all different planets. So they came here and they started to build very, very quickly. They started to build circular cities. And these cities would have giant pyramids at the center of them. And they were really playing a lot with ley lines. The ley lines would have been highly, highly activated back then. Would have been like an electrical current, and they wanted to harness that electrical current. And so they had this interest in evolution, in what we understand as technology, but they would not have been working with such dense technology at that point. But they really wanted to evolve and they really wanted to build. But there was at the same time their desire. The desire that drove them, at least that if you asked an Atlantean, like, why are you doing this? Why are you building all of this? They would have said, you know, that it's for like the glory of the one infinite creator, like so that we can show like this is what the one infinite creator can create. And so that would have sounded really nice. You know, it would have sounded like, oh, okay, yeah, that sounds really good. And so things were going quite well for them at a very rapid pace. They were building cities. They were harnessing hydropower. So they would dig these giant canals and allow water to flow in from the ocean towards their cities. They would use hydropower the same way that we use like a dam here to create electricity. They would use that to power different things in their cities. They used hydropower at the height of their civilization, which came very quickly, about 5,000 years in. And when you think about the Lemurians being here for so long and them never having built anything like that or experienced technology in that way, you know, having the height of your civilization come after 5,000 years would have just been like they're moving at a rocket pace. And they ruled mostly in councils, and that eventually ended up being their downfall. But they ruled mostly in councils, and they didn't have anything like kings or individual leaders, so they weren't quite at that level of energetic and frequency corruption that we'd see nowadays, where we're ruled by, you know, kings and singular leaders. They were still ruled by councils, but the councils, all of them had a lot of divine masculine energy. Even the ones who were in female or feminine bodies were very, very driven for all of this building, all of this advancement, and they wanted it to come very, very fast. So I know one of the questions that you were wondering about is technology. And yeah, the hydro.
Yeah, I guess I. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I guess in terms to put it in like what we think of technology now, you know, like I just feel like everything I had read or heard was like, it's just a completely different perspective than what we imagine as technology.
Yeah, we imagine things that are really dense, you know, like a computer, a laptop, a skyscraper. We imagine things that are really dense. And so at fifth through eighth dimension, they're still operating semi-crystalline. There is still a highly energetic component. And the truth is that when you know how to harness energy, you don't have to try so hard. And so one of the reasons why we kind of drown our planet in all of these dense creations like plastics is because we don't know how to harness energy. And that was what the Atlanteans figured out very, very quickly. They figured out hydropower. They figured out magnetics. They would use magnetics almost like a hovercraft, right? So they would use magnetics to hover above the ground and be able to move things across distances at a very fast rate. And eventually, towards the end of their civilization, they started to use sound and sonic power. And that was really something that started to bring about kind of their downfall, is that they were very interested in technology, but then they were also kind of interested in weapons. And it wouldn't have been, you know, the atomic bomb like we have now, but what started to corrupt these councils is that there were multiple different cities, and they were each ruled by a council, and each council had a lot of divine masculine energy. And wherever there's too much divine masculine energy, there is this desire for power and control. It's just one of the aspects of divine masculine energy. And they wanted more power and more control. And so instead of having democratic elections for these councils, council members that were chosen by the people, they were starting to centralize and change how these council members were chosen. And so they started to go into like choosing the elders, right? So now you have someone who's been in power for 200, 300, 400, 500 years. And the Atlantean lifespan was similar to the Lemurian lifespan because they'd used the same body vehicles. So it was about 900, 700 years on average. And so they started to use things like seniority. And seniority is not always good because now you have the same person who's been in power for a really long time. And lifetime positions, right? We see that even in the United States. It's like, you've been in power for so long, you've been in this position for so long that all of your ideas and your desires and your drive are a little bit outdated, a little bit out of touch with where society is now. And so they started to centralize power in those different ways by changing the rules of how the council members were chosen. And once they had these different councils in different cities for a long enough amount of time, the council started to kind of turn on each other. And that's when the different Atlantean cities started to become interested in weapons, and this idea of like defending themselves. Now, on the galactic scale, you know, the GFL and the Council of Saturn is like, this is going great. Like, they're definitely descending into third dimension. Like, everything, you know, bottoms up. And it was, you know, but when you were here on the planet, and I remember being here as a Lemurian, and like, we would see their ships, right? So they had ships, and they weren't quite as advanced as we will see in fourth density, but they had ships. And we would see them in the sky, and we would always call it, you know, the word that we had for like abomination, right? And so it was kind of, to us, it was like, you're turning away from nature and you're elevating yourself above nature, right? So you're creating separation between you and nature through that technology and through what they were using. And, you know, in some ways, different galactics and different channels would say like, well, the Lemurians are just a little outdated. You know, they were very sticking by the same rules that they'd had for 60,000 years, and the Atlanteans were more advanced. And so we see like the different biases in the way that we can look at how the Lemurians viewed the Atlanteans versus how the younger Atlanteans viewed the older Atlanteans. And so there's starting to become more and more separation, even though the Atlanteans were highly advanced and they understood source, and I wouldn't say that they worshipped source, but again, their reasoning for why they built what they did was to show what source could create through them as, you know, as part of the one infinite creator.
So these cities, I mean, I've seen a mock-up of what it, you know, like the earth space it would have taken up like as a continent then. So you say cities, I feel like you say Atlantis, like people are thinking about like Bahamas, like it's tropical, like there's a lot of sand, it's very blue. But what was the climate like? Like it spanned such, you know, it was so big that were there different climates? Are there different types of humanoids or Atlanteans, you know what I mean? Like what does that really look like?
Yeah, at the time that they were here, it still would have been quite warm on the planet, would have been warmer than it is even right now. And so it would have been quite warm. Most of the continent would have been a very tropical climate, like what you experience in Mexico, Cancun. But because it was a whole continent, it wasn't island life by any means. You know, there were definitely people, different communities, and that's when they started to have like cities and towns, things that the Lemurians really didn't have. They were still mo much more tropical. So there would have been cities and towns on the coast for sure, but there would have been the larger cities would have been more towards the center of the, or at least inland from the coast. So you could still go to the coast. There was quite a bit of travel. There was no differentiation though, as far as like as far as them thinking that they were like separate countries the way that we do now, which is very bizarre. It's one of the strangest things that really we brought a lot of that from Orion, this idea of like separate kingdoms, separate countries. For them, they were all Atlanteans, and then they would have had a name for the city that they were from or identifying as from. So there wouldn't have been any, you know, boundaries drawn in the sand, so to speak. But they started to get to that point, especially towards the end, where it was like this city is versus that city, and this council doesn't like that council. And because of that centralized power, it started to corrupt itself very quickly. Now, one of the hopes with the Atlantean experiment was that they would have some form of harmony created with the planet, because the Lemurians were a little too divine feminine and the planet was divine feminine. So they thought maybe we'll balance them out to have a divine masculine society on a divine feminine planet. And what's really interesting is, like, in my personal opinion of channeling this and talking about this and the way that I see how their civilization fell, I personally don't think that it was a success. I don't think that it, and that's what's so interesting, because on one hand, like, divine feminine is like the void, which you would think is the most powerful energy, but divine masculine is control. And so the control ultimately overpowered the connection that they had with Gaia. And it took a while. Like I said, they were here 12, 13,000 years, and they went through different rises, different falls, different expansions of their society. There were some Atlanteans that weren't really interested in staying on that continent. And so they would have left and started populating other available land masses. Some of them would have traveled to what we now know as South America, North America. Some of them would have traveled to Africa and through Africa, by extension into the Middle East and eventually up into Europe. And all of that would have taken a significant amount of time. And so it's, yeah, their civilization went through a lot of different evolutions in a very short amount of time. However, the level of technology and what they were able to build, as far as the pyramids that were at the center of each city, and the way that they were able to harness energy, really has never been seen again on this planet. And I don't know that we ever will see anything like that in the future. I don't know if Gaians will actually go in that direction, back towards energetic power and energetic technology, as opposed to kind of just evolving out of it and leaving the planet, and leaving the planet to its divine feminine energy.
I wanted to get your opinion on any connection between Atlantis and early human Gaian civilizations, like Egypt, Rome, Greece, and even like Aztecs, Mayans. There's a lot of like through lines where people are like, okay, but this is built here. I feel like I bring it up every time, and it's those things that like populate the History Channel. You know, it's every episode of Ancient Aliens or something where they're like, well, how does this exist? And they think that pyramids were created by huge magnets and were we helped by aliens? And so I just feel like this is a good time to bring up, well, pyramids. I feel like we don't really know how our pyramids were constructed other than, you know, pictures. We see people pushing up a pulley system and they're like, that wouldn't have worked. I wanted to get your thoughts on all of those connections.
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts.
Yeah.
A lot of thoughts. Yeah, no, this is a great question. So, as we started to see the Atlanteans start to migrate off of their continent, they definitely took their, you know, some communities to South America, and really the marker of Atlantean civilization is the Step Pyramid. And so that was what was at the focal point of all of their major cities. And it was considered sacred. It was considered, you know, a way to ascend with source consciousness. It was considered the symbol of like the third eye, which they would have been well versed in how to connect with the quantum field, connect with different galactics. They were on like everyday talking basis with the GFL and with beings who were on ships, beings who were in deeper densities of consciousness. So there was a lot of transparency as far as communication through the third eye. And so that would have been their symbol, was that triangle pointing upwards. And the Step Pyramid that we see all over South America and in Mexico, that would have been created from Atlantean templates. So probably created by descendants who would have also used their third eye to download, you know, how and where to build these structures. And yeah, as far as using, you know, magnetics and sonic power to move these really large pieces of rock, that would have been the way that they did it, especially through magnetics. And that's how the Atlanteans did it. And so it's not too far out there to assume that their descendants built them. I wouldn't be surprised if I tapped into really old ones, if there was just like direct links that, you know, certain Atlantean groups had sent them to that specific area because of the ley lines and because of what energy would have been centralized there to build those to contribute to Atlantean civilization. And it just so happens that because that main continent is gone, the ones that are still here are located in South America. My professional opinion, as someone who studied art history in college, and that's what my degree is in, is that the way that we date things is so far off. We really don't have a great way of dating things. A lot of it is guesstimates, and a lot of it is based on an assumption that humans were the main creators on this planet for like millions and billions of years. Our DNA is very old. We have not been on this planet for very long. And I think that's really what starts to boggle science's, you know, direction is, or human science's direction is that the DNA is really, you know, millions and billions of years old coming from the Lyrans. But we have not been on this planet for very long. So most of the structures are not very old. And then, of course, we have like the Egyptian pyramids, the three that have smooth sides, the three in Giza, those were created by Ra when Ra visited this planet, created it through thought. And that's because they were in a higher density and a higher dimension. And so moving giant. Huge, I think they're made out of limestone. Moving huge limestone pieces through thought would have been absolutely nothing to them. And that's the point where that we are evolving back to, as far as where we're going in fourth density. But yeah, the Atlanteans have a really direct connection with ancient Egypt. So after their fall, so we'll talk a little bit about the fall of Atlantis. There's the sunny version. This is what I call it, the nice sunny version, which is that there was a meteor that had gotten caught up in our atmosphere, and that pieces of it were breaking off, and that it would occasionally hit different parts of the planet, and you know, giant pieces of a meteor would have mass destruction. I mean, it would destroy and it would cause tsunamis, and then it would displace, you know, the tectonic plates would move. And so there was a lot of displacement of the continent. And I think we see that a lot on the East Coast. You know, the East Coast of the United States, especially, looks like it's gone through some major erosion. And it's, I mean, the shape of it and the shape of, you know, the Gulf of Mexico, when you look at that, you're like, something happened here at some point in time. It wasn't just planes, you know, messing with it for the past 5,000 years. Something happened there. And so, yeah, there was a lot of meteor showers that would have caused a mass destruction on the planet. And that's happened a few times. And it was allowed to happen. It was allowed to happen because they wanted eventually for the civilizations that were here to descend all the way down to third dimension, and they were running out of time. And so this would have been about 13,000 years ago. So if someone's like, you had 75,000 years, now all you have left is 13,000 to like get the job done, you know, they would have been like working double time. So they're like, what do you got? A meteor? Okay, great. Like, throw it at the planet.
Rocks. For rocks, right?
Throw rocks at them. You know, so it was able to happen. And we know this because the GFL will tell you that they allowed it. And they'll also tell you that there have been other meteors headed towards the planet that they did not allow, and that they just, you know, kicked off of
course.
So they allowed that. But there were wars that were breaking out amongst the Atlanteans, and they were not nearly as violent or aggressive, I would say, as the ones that we've experienced here. You know, they didn't have guns, they didn't have bombs, but they had sonic weapons. And so they would use sound, and they would use sound as a weapon against other cities, and specifically to kind of bring these councils that had started pitting themselves against each other, to bring them to heel, to bring them to do what one central council wanted them to do. And someone who talks about this quite a bit is like Shaman Durek. You know, I think he was on one of the councils. I could be wrong, but I remember hearing him talk about it a couple of years ago, and he had a lot of different Atlantean lifetimes. And so they started to use sonic power against each other, and they did not know what sonic power had the capability of doing, and that it could also displace large amounts of water, that it could also, you know, destroy land masses. And so they used it really recklessly. And again, it was planned that they would have this descent, and so it was necessary. But there was a lot of pain that it caused. There was a lot of destruction. There was a lot of karma. And there is a lot of souls out there who still have fear of tsunamis, who still have fear of really loud sounds. You know, that sonic boom sound. If
it's
that
me.
Sound, yeah, you may have part of that.
Water, tsunamis, loud noises. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was on the other side of the planet in Lemuria, just living my life. And then it's like, tsunami, you know, your entire civilization is gone, and there's no opportunity to go back, because it was planned that it would be the end. And so they allow different things to happen that really reduce the population. At the end of the Atlantean civilization, the Lemurian population was very, very small. And at that point, we had seen different natural disasters that had taken its toll on our main continent. There were a lot of islands that had been created at that point. And so it had kind of gone back to that very tribal lifestyle, and on islands. And so now they're secluded, and they're much more separated from the bigger community of Lemurians. And so that started to take its toll on the Lemurian population, and that they started to spread Southeast Asia, you know, different parts of the Americas. And then the Atlantean population started to dwindle. And towards the end there, the final piece that was going to essentially serve as like a 98% reset for the planet so that the Gaians could be planted here, was the flood. And so that was really the end of the Atlantean and Lemurian story. The flood happened, and again, it's something that the GFL allowed to happen because there was a bigger plan at play, and they had been working on a peace treaty with 22 different galactic 22 different galactic communities, different galactic families to create the Gaian human. And so they had been working on the DNA that we have and preparing this planet for it to be the location of this peace treaty, living out the story of it as the Earth human, as the Gaian. And they had very little time to do it. So about 12,000 years ago, that final flood really diminished the population. It was 98%. It was not 100%. And I do want to talk about Shasta too, because I know that that's actually a really important part of the DNA story. But then, so let's talk about Shasta, and then we'll kind of go back to other ancient civilizations that have some codes in them, especially.
Yeah, so I heard different things about. I'm not necessarily sure of how they got there, but I've heard many different things about Lemurians still living underneath Mount Shasta, which could be crazy. So that's one thing. And then two, that the vibration, which I mean, this is like widely known, the vibration around Mount Shasta is like very high. Obviously, people go there for spiritual retreats. And is it connected to Lemuria? And are there Lemurians living under Mount Shasta? I saw like multiple videos that this was a thing. And then I heard some guy like researched it for years and then got a group of people together and they were like gonna go because they had seen crazy things. They'd like, and apparently this guy disappeared. I don't remember his name, but it's like, I think it sounds crazy, but it's worth mentioning because it's out there on YouTube.
Great
I'm
question.
here to debunk.
I remember seeing it in your list of questions, and I was like, "What, huh?" So I was very intrigued to go on the journey about Mount Shasta. And what's interesting is the one time that I went to Mount Shasta, and I was driving through and from California back to Washington State, and I asked my guides, like, "Should I stop here?" This was like, it was literally like 5 days after I had come out of the desert and I was full channeling, and I was getting to start taking clients. And I asked them, like, should I stop here? Should I take a look around, go for a walk, a hike? I know this is a really charged place. And they were like, no, keep driving. So the deal with Mount Shasta is it is very high frequency. Mount Shasta is the center of a stargate. So there is a stargate side of Mount Shasta, and it is very similar to the one that is in so it was created by the Lemurians, and I would call them more like Lemurian descendants. So that would have happened before the flood and before the like final destruction before Gaians were given the planet. So it was created by Lemurian descendants, or the last of the Lemurians, you could say. And there's a stargate there. There's a stargate in Sedona, and there's a stargate in Maui, Hawaii. And they are all deeply connected to the Lemurians and to that 10th through 12th dimension, which is why people go to those places for healing, because 10th through 12th dimension is where the healing frequencies come from. So you can go to those locations, and through intention and through frequency work, you can heal your body of physical ailments. Not everyone, but I absolutely believe those who go there with a strong enough intention and a will to see it done, but can have that experience. So it is, the other role that it plays is that it is an archive and a stargate all at once. And that's what makes Shasta very, very unique. So the archive that is on and underneath Shasta is part of the living library that Earth is, that Gaia is. A Gaia is a living library where other galactic species can come to get codes and templates and to take them to populate other planets as far as plants and animals. So that's what the library is for, and that's why we have such a variation on Earth. So where you would get those codes and templates from is a archival point like Mount Shasta. And I think there's probably three or four others on the planet, probably four total. And so that archival point is why so many people see ET activity and UFO activity there, because there's all of these different ships coming and going, coming and going. And
sure.
Doing that because they're picking up codes, like they're going to the library to pick up their books and then they're heading out to do. And he does have a very high frequency there. So there's a lot of spiritual experiences that you can have. Now, if you go into like the caves underneath, are you going to find a group of tall, dark haired Lemurians in loincloths just living down there? I don't think so. I think what you will find is that within that archive point is where they have stored the Lemurian DNA templates on the planet. And that is why people are picking up that there are Lemurians living underneath Mount Shasta. So, like I said at the beginning, the Lemurian DNA, because it's such a high frequency, it is nearly impossible to destruct or destroy it. And there are different factions of galactic groups out there that would like to have destroyed it at different points in our history. That is why there was a lot of genocide against indigenous peoples in the Americas. And that is, you know, really across the board for both continents, south and north. That is why there was so much genocide directed towards them, because there was Atlantean DNA, especially on the East Coast side, and then there was Lemurian DNA. And there were different reasons and that they wanted to destroy it, but mostly was to sever the connection that they had with the higher dimensional planes. We know that if you go into indigenous cultures, you know, they still have an extremely strong connection to higher dimensional planes, to source consciousness, to great spirit. It is still so strong. It's incredibly strong. For the last Lemurian, the last true Lemurian to have walked the earth about 13,000 years ago, it is still so strong. Like, they never lost that connection, no matter how much they mix their DNA with Gaians, who would come and populate the planet after that, no matter how much they mix with Atlanteans, which I don't think it would have had that much of an effect on their DNA, but definitely mixing with, you know, a third density being like a Gaian, there's opportunity for that DNA to be strongly diluted. And the DNA was just so powerful that those indigenous communities still kept that connection to what they call a great spirit and to source. And they were not easily brought into religions and puritanical cultures. You know, there was a huge resistance to that indoctrination. And I believe that, you know, it was their beliefs, but of course, like, they had a DNA in them that was like that telling them, like the full body experience of telling them, you know, you don't need an intermediary between you and great spirit. Like, you can, you're a part of it. You're a part of the one infinite creator. So the DNA templates for Lemurians are stored there. There are some that are stored in Maui, not Stargate. There's probably some that are stored in Hiti, in the Stargate that is there. Probably not in Sedona, but that is really what people are picking up when they think of Mount Shasta, and that there are Lemurians underneath. Now, there is a lot of ET activity there, and once you start interacting with ETs, especially the ones who are coming here to use the archives, you know, it's not a place that I would go wander off alone by myself. Because it's an archive point, there isn't a lot of there. It's not all beings of light that come there to get those templates. And it's like a library. So it's every citizen in the galaxy's right to come and borrow some of those templates for the different projects that they're working on. So as a human, I probably wouldn't go wandering around by myself. But there is a lot of interesting things that happen there. There are guardians there. So if you have like Bigfoot, Sasquatch sightings around Mount Shasta are really, really high. And that's because the guardians look like what we think of as Bigfoot, but they're actually in the dimension.
I think that's super interesting though, because I think that like in America, when you hear Mount Shasta, you either like, you probably have a few different ideas about it, but it's largely a place where people would go to like become higher on a spiritual level. And like people will walk around alone and they do go on retreats alone and they're like out in the woods doing their thing, having their experiences, meditating or whatever. And so it makes sense that people are seeing wild things, because how most humans today, right, don't understand that if there's a visiting or a visitor, that the intention won't always be good, or you know what I mean? So that's why your guides were like, nope, keep driving. Like, just.
Yeah. And I think too, because I was so new, the people that I know who work on Mount Shasta and who do venture out alone have been trained for 10, 20, 30 years by their guides. And I definitely think at this point, like I would be fine. But at that point, I was fresh out of the desert, you know, brand new, and I was still learning how to protect myself against negative and dark entities. And I was still kind of figuring out frequency. So the people that I know, especially like Sandra Walter, like she'll go out and like live by herself in a hammock on Mount Shasta. Like she did this for like 10 years straight. She would live out there in the wilderness by herself. And she goes there every year. And but her frequency is so high that her natural frequency is fully fifth dimensional. And so if your frequency is really high, you don't really have anything to worry about, because you know, beings with negative intentions aren't going to be very interested in you. But if your resting frequency is not very high, which the normal humans is not very high, then, you know, they may fuck with you. You know, who knows what else? So it's probably not a place that I would tell, you know, a group of people like, everybody scatter, do whatever you want. Love and light is all here. It is a highly charged place. I definitely don't want to diminish like the energy that's there. But it's an archive point. It's an entry point. And so that's why you see so many different UFOs. It's kind of like Joshua Tree. Joshua Tree is another entry point. And some people go there and have amazing positive experiences with ETs. And others get in their car and drive straight out of Joshua Tree. And they're like, I'm out of here because of a negative experience. And that's one of the reasons why I teach psychic work, is so that you can manage your own frequency and know how to handle different entities. And that's going to be the future on this planet anyway, is that we're going to relearn our psychic gifts and relearn frequency work and how to take care of ourselves.
Oh, that's fascinating. Okay, write that down for another podcast. We need to go into a whole different thing. Okay, but so we talked about kind of like where Lemurian DNA lies and kind of the where different civilizations or groups that are related. Is there any groups like that that are related to Atlanteans? Were people dispersed? Like, were the people on East Coast, or did they only go to one place, or Europe, or wherever?
So the Atlanteans, they went across Africa. They came to the Americas. They did intermingle with some of the Lemurian descendants who already made their way into the Americas continents. And those who survived the flood, that was essentially kind of a blank slate. And then they were going to allow another civilization as a peace treaty creation to be on this planet in 3D, 3D, and that would be the final dimensional plane. And so after that, they knew that in 2012, very rapidly, it was going to start their ascension on Earth into fourth density. So there was this larger plan at play the whole time. And one of the reasons I bring that up is because for me, one of the things I've had to work through in my Lemurian DNA is just the feeling of shock and betrayal. And so working through that and understanding that. And so some people might carry that wound with them of feeling like, am I going to be betrayed by those who are in charge of me or above me or mentoring me or the government, et cetera. So yeah, so after the Atlanteans started to migrate during their civilization before the official end, there were quite a few of them that ended up in North Africa and the Middle East, and they were exploring. But after the fall, this group got together again, and it was a smaller group than had originally founded Atlantis. And it was a smaller group than the ones who had, kind of collaborated and asked for a place to go to have their divine masculine experiment. The ones who were left, who wanted to return to Gaia, who wanted to come back to Earth, had all displayed a certain level of balance in their energy. And so they were allowed to come back, and their new experiment on a very small level was Egypt. And so their intention with Egypt was to bring higher levels of consciousness, but to balance masculine and feminine energy. So it was like, okay, we didn't do so great the first time. We were trying to balance a civilization with the planetary energy. So what if we went back and we asked a group of souls who also wanted to incarnate there, who were going into their divine feminine incarnations, if they would like to join us, and we will balance through masculine, feminine, as far as male, female. So that was their plan. That was their pitch to the different councils. And that was really the experiment and the intention of Egypt. Now, they were so fresh out of Atlantis in their Atlantean lifetimes. Many of them didn't even would have, died and left that incarnation 13,000 BC and then wouldn't have returned again until 7,000 BC, right? And so there's a significant amount of time. And whenever you have a very recent incarnation, you are bringing a lot of that with you. So they brought a lot of the technology, how to build cities, that they were connected to higher dimensional planes of consciousness, architecture. They brought a lot of that into Egypt. So we see that faction there that wanted to balance, male, female, as far as masculine and feminine energy. And that really stayed with the Gaians. That's how we think of masculine and feminine energy. We tend to think first of male, female, which is just one way of viewing it. It's by no means the ultimate way at all. It's just one lens. We do know that there was an even smaller group who made it to Greece and different Greek islands and had some influence there. However, the majority of the Greek civilization what became an Arcturian experiment. They kind of came in and they had been working with the GFL and the planet and working with the 22-strand DNA and the peace treaty. And so they had a group of younger Arcturians, and some of my soul siblings were part of that group. And I was very much on the fringe. I was still, young in my divine feminine incarnations. And so, there was a group of Arcturians who wanted to have an experiment, and that became the Greek civilization. And then, yeah, I mean, I think we definitely see it in South and North America as far as the step pyramids. There is in so many different places that you can see Atlantean influence, However, not all of it was directly DNA. A lot of it, especially the deeper that we got into the Gaians having their time on this planet, of being the only species on this planet, the more that it was channeled, the more of that technology and the architecture and the step pyramids would have been channeled from the higher self who had an Atlantean incarnation. Yeah, so there's different ways to get that information that wouldn't have all come from a direct source, especially with 98% of the planet being 98% of the population being eliminated during that flood, with only 2% left. There really wasn't a lot of direct DNA. However, when they created the Gaian, and that 22-strand DNA was implanted, there has been a lot of genetic, I don't want to say testing, manipulation would be a better word. There's been a lot of genetic manipulation over the years, and there's been a lot of influence as far as trying to breed certain communities and groups together and keeping that DNA together for different reasons. Not all of it was nefarious. Some of it was to really bring out Lemurian DNA in a certain community, or to bring out Atlantean DNA in a certain community. But we do see genetic manipulation a lot more with groups that did not have positive intentions.
Interesting.
And that's where the
My
whole.
next question, I kind of wanted. Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, that's where, like in Egypt, the whole like marry your brother and sister, like keeping the dynasty, all
Sure.
that, that's where it came from. And so it got really corrupted, and the intent originally was to keep the to highlight certain DNA strands, and to highlight certain influences in the DNA. And then it started to turn into like inbreeding and incest, and like just, and we learned through those experiences that you would have deformities, and like that it was not not a good idea.
Oh, wow, that's wild. Okay, so my next question, I kind of want to pivot to what happened with Atlantis' downfall and the high amount of masculine energy and masculine leaders. What does that karma have to do with today? And what our civilization has gone through in our recent like shift. I feel like there's like a lot of parallels in terms of like power hungry and masculine led society and this conflict that is never ending. So I feel like I have so many questions about that, but I'll start there.
No, this is great. I don't think it's going to shock anyone when I say this, but it's definitely going to be a light bulb moment. The two points where we see centralized Atlantean karma is the United States and the Middle East. And my, how we have somehow found a way to, especially for the United States, to always be in that, in the Middle East in some capacity. And a lot of people attribute it to different like biblical things, but for me, I see the Atlantean DNA and Atlantean karma, and that corrupted divine masculine energy, or I should say dark masculine energy of power and control over others. So the Pleiadians tried to have a lot of influence when the United States was founded. We see in George Washington's letters, he talks about being visited by a being of light who told him that you should have a bill of rights for your people, and you should have open elections, and that everyone should get to vote. And so he was visited by Pleiadians who were kind of trying to assist in the resolution of that karma, because that group of beings who created the karma in Atlantis evolved into what we now refer to as the Pleiadians. They're part of that Pleiadian group that works with Earth. So they have tried in different ways to bring about the resolution of the karma, whether through that direct influence, and then, of course, within the DNA itself. I don't know how it will resolve in the Middle East, but I know that for the United States, one of the markers that it is going to be resolved is seeing our consciousness grow beyond the patriarchy, grow beyond systems of control and centralizing power, and then seeing our consciousness grow beyond these different power figures, especially in government, that are tenured in again and again. And so that was the downfall originally. And I never really talk about politics, but I think some of you guys will find this interesting. So that's really where I see the most influence of Atlantean karma trying to resolve itself. So it has to happen through the people. I think a lot of the Atlanteans are reincarnated right now. And especially the ones who are trying to be a positive influence on George Washington and like early presidents, early founders of this country, because there was high amounts of Atlantean DNA already in the population that was on the East Coast, where the United States was founded, and that DNA was going to start being assimilated into the DNA of the those who are coming from other countries. And so immigrating into this country. So they saw the path of assimilation through the indigenous cultures, and they wanted to get ahead of it, and they wanted to play a role as far as re resolving the karma. But ultimately, it has to happen through the people, through the holders of the karma, through the holders of the DNA. And we can pick up on this karma just looking at our own lives and looking at, like, okay, where am I holding too much masculine energy? Where am I participating in systems of control? Where am I not allowing others to have a voice and not allowing for there to be a democratic process? And so, if those are trigger points for you, then you might be a part of the resolution of Atlantean karma. So, there's a group that works directly with the United States and probably with other communities. They really don't see country lines the way that we do, national lines the way that we do. They're really working with groups of people where they see the DNA. So even though I'm saying the United States, that's just because I know that information about the founding of the United States and the interference that they tried to have for a positive influence, which I'm sure they tried to positively influence Canada as well, and Mexico, and different countries in South America, where that DNA is also at play. But we see it, I see that Atlantean karma so much whenever I hear about the United States and the Middle East and how much they have been through. My entire childhood and teen years was all about the Iraq and Afghanistan war, and it was always confusing to me. I know people want to talk about oil and they want to talk about like tangible things here, but I think on a spiritual level, when you really start to zoom out and look at these situations, it's like, of all the places on the planet, why are you guys so involved with each other? And karma really one of the main reasons. So I think that karma is not fully resolved. I think that there's different paths in the Middle East that could be taken for that karma to be resolved. It's not all going to look political. A lot of it is going to look like, what are the people up to? What are the citizens up to? And how do they view themselves? And what do they allow as far as their rulers and governance over them? And I think that changing our governments and the way that we are governed by others, and I don't think that governing others is necessarily a bad thing at all. I think that it brings structure, but there are ways for the energy to be really balanced, and I think that is where we are going to see most of the karma resolve, because that was the karma from Atlantis. It was those councils and the corrupt ways that they kept themselves in power for very long periods.
So it's like almost like a course correction. Like we did this the wrong way last time, so we're here to like, that's why it's so triggering now. It's like we can't make those same mistakes again and destroy each other, essentially. Wow, that's
Absolutely.
fascinating. Two things. One, I feel like we need galactic involvement throughout history. That needs to be a whole other podcast. I'm nerding out just like thinking about George Washington getting divine downloads. And two, so the karma, is that why things in, in our lifetime, the last like 30, years have really been like crazy in terms of like conflict, and especially like America having this huge turning point, and we're entering, now we're in the age of Aquarius, and it's like this time of like justice and like moving towards peace. Is there a reason why it ramped up? Like, because I know you mentioned earlier, like that 75,000 year thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So the karmic resolution has to happen, and it's going to happen really, really quickly. Some of it's going to happen in the very overt, obvious ways, like war and conflict and very physical ways. But the GFL especially is doing everything they can, and of course all of the supporting characters like the Ascended Masters and all the other galactic families are doing everything that they can for the resolution to come about in a non-violent, non-physical way. So consciousness doesn't have to grow through physical altercation. Consciousness is an awareness. Consciousness is a remembering. And so I think that is why star seeds are so important, because as we grow our consciousness, we have that positive influence on the rest of the planet. And it only takes 1%. That has always been the goal, that there would be 1% of the planet that would achieve Christ consciousness, fifth dimensional consciousness, and that 1% would be enough for the rest of the planet to have to be influenced by that frequency into a higher dimensional state. So that's why we're here. That's why, like, if you're watching this right now and you're in my world, like, that's why we're here. We're part of that 1%, and all of these star seeds that were sent from all over the galaxy to come here and to be part of a non-violent conflict resolution that would ultimately help them to resolve their karma. Now, it's tricky because it's not just Atlantean karma on this planet. Most of the inhabitants of this planet are from Orion and from Mars and from Malduk, where there is significant amounts of karma. And that's why our planet has such a high population. 8 billion people on one planet is almost unheard of. I've never seen anything like that before, not in Lyran populations, not in Pleiadian populations. 8 billion on one planet is a massive amount of souls on a planet. So there are Orion refugees here. There are Malduk and Mars refugees here, and they bring a lot of that warrior energy and warrior spirit and warrior karma with them. So there is significant amounts of karma that are being resolved. But I think ultimately the future of Earth on this planet is that most of the population will leave, that will go to other planets. There's already two other Earth-like planets that are third density that are being populated right now. And so I think most will leave and follow the karmic path to a different planet. And ultimately, in 10, 15,000 years, the only beings that are going to be on this planet are the gardeners, and they are here to oversee the Garden of Gaia, and that was always her original purpose. And those of us who have gone back to galactic lifetimes or fourth density lifetimes, we will come and go in our ships as we pick up codes and we take those codes to other planets. So there's always a bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger picture. And I like to think of the bigger picture whenever I get overwhelmed by the thoughts of war and violence on this planet and what it does to our nervous system and our psyche and our mental health. It's destructive. But ultimately, we are designed to resolve karma through consciousness. And that's the internal game. That is the inner work. And that is why internal work is so important, because you can resolve all of it within you. That's all that's necessary is the awareness of your thoughts. And you already have that within you.
Wow. I think like a lot of people that might receive this information don't necessarily know what to do with it. And I think that's part of like the human condition. Like, well, I'm here and there's a purpose, but what's the purpose? And am I going to like be a hero? You know what I mean? Like there's a greater story of like, well, there's only big players and then the rest are just normal people. But I think it's so important that you say like, you really just need to do the work within. And that's like where most of it happens. Cause I think most people are so action oriented. They're like, well, I need to save someone. I need to be a part of a government. I need to do something big. When really, like, it's a lot easier and you already have the tools.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the purpose of our universe, the purpose of going through these seven densities of consciousness is to grow in consciousness. It's Source's way of asking, like, who am I? And we are the answer to that question. And I think that if you are action-oriented person, that's wonderful. The truth is, most starseeds and most people attracted to this kind of information are not interested in being a part of governments and going into these roles, because they understand on a quantum level that they've either already had those roles. Especially in Orion, a lot of us went through those roles. A lot of us were soldiers and warriors and leaders and government leaders and law enforcement and military. We went through those roles in Orion. So most stars aren't interested in living that out again on this planet, but they are interested in remembering the truth of who they are so that they can do what they came here to do. And what you came here to do, the collective mission of us being on this planet when there's all these other places that we could be, is that we came to raise the frequency of this planet and support all of these refugees from Orion and Mars and Malduk who are carrying high karma, came to support them in their growth and consciousness. And we came to support the planet, Gaia, in her transition into fourth density. So the way that that's going to look for all of us is going to be different. And I think if you feel called to be action oriented, like, go for it. Go for it. That's part of your path. And the truth is that when you are acting authentically, when you are honoring the true authenticity of who you are, you're not going to get it wrong. You're not going to be on the wrong path. You're not going to miss your purpose, you know, in so many ways, like just you living and existing, like that is Source's purpose. That is important. And we can definitely, the ego wants to be special, and the ego wants to be the hero. And the truth is, like, you are the hero for you. And so who do you need? Who do you need you to be? That is the most important question you could ask yourself, because it's all internal. I mean, everything happening in the external, all of the wars, all of the violence, all of the trauma, all of the pains, you know, that rude thing that your boss said to you today, all of that stems from something within. And so when we go within, we change what is without. And it's incredible to watch that shift in evolution, but it takes responsibility. Acknowledging that it is an internal game first and foremost, and taking on the responsibility for your own internal world, as opposed to allowing the external to dictate you. And I say that in, you know, in air quotes, because it never really is. It's just something within you that is trying to be expressed, that is trying to be seen and heard and understood. So it's all an internal game, and you're equipped. And if there's one thing that I could tell every starseed on this planet, is like, you are qualified to be here. Like, look in my eyes, starseed. Look in my eyes, YouTubers. Like, we have done this before. We've done this before. Like, you are equipped. You are qualified to be here. We've got this. Like, you've got this. And it's trusting yourself that you've got this is half the battle.
Yeah, I think that's why we have souls like you here, because we need someone to look us in the eye and say, you got this. It's all eternal. I'll help you.
Yeah.
We'd be lost without you, Annie.
Oh, I doubt it. You'd find
I would be.
Yeah, it's the honor of my lifetime to be here and to help and to support in any way that I can. And some days it feels like it's so small, and other days, you know, I get a comment or a DM. It's like it changed someone's life out there, and so it mattered. And that's really how all of us are operating. It's not always going to be big and glamorous, and probably not going to be the president of the United States, but it is going to impact others. And that's what's most important. And I think that doing it less with the ego and more with the heart is what this planet needs more than anything right now.
I couldn't agree with myself more. Less with the ego, more with the heart. That is the direction that we are creating the new earth in real time, happening by you, for you, and through you. Wasn't that such a trip? So many incredible codes and downloads and memory coming through. I hope that you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. Sometimes when you receive a really big transmission like this one, it can kind of blow your hair back a little bit. So just allow yourself to integrate, allow yourself to remember. Your soul knows exactly everything that I was talking about, and even more than just that. Your soul has all of that divine cosmic memory, and it is coming back online. One last thank you to the incredible and incomparable Alicia Bryan, of course, for this conversation and for her contributions. We are so grateful, and I speak on behalf of all of the listeners and especially myself. I literally could not do this without her, so I am really, really, really grateful. And to the listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, if there was something about this that activated you, please share it with a friend, someone who you think might be interested, might be activated, might have something to say. Who knows what it could be, but someone that might take an interest to this episode or any of the episodes. And I am so eternally grateful for that. And as always, I will see you on the next one.